going to discuss anger on the internet this hour and how social media is used by some as an anger outlet. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have you noticed this? A lot more ranting on the internet, on Twitter, on Facebook. Do you ever do this? Well, some recent Twitter rants by celebrities brought this issue to our attention in an article in USA Today. And our guest from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay was interviewed for that piece on Twitter rants. Why do people rant on Twitter? And we wonder what you think. Have you experienced this? Have you witnessed this? Do you do it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Ryan Martin, an associate professor and the chairperson of the psychology department at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. He is also co-author of the paper, Anger on the Internet, The Perceived Value of Rant Sites. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's a rant site?
So a rant site is a website that, and I think they really took off about 5 years ago and then have been slowly dying down, but still exist, where people can go and just vent anonymously about anything they want. And so the most famous of these is a website called justrage.com that gets millions of hits, millions of readers and posts, and people can just go vent about whatever.
And so, I mean, if somebody, I don't know, slighted us or bumped into us or if a store did something wrong to us, I mean, it's anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, the rants you see there are everything from, venting about a parent or a sibling or a spouse to I got water on my lap when I was washing my hands in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's the full range.
So is there, are rant sites such as Rant Rampage or D-Rant, do they serve a purpose?
I think for a long time they did, and I think that in the sense that people would go there, and they would go there because it made them feel good. And so when you ask people why they go there, you would find, and what we found is that it is everything from I think it's funny, I think it's interesting, I'm curious, to I go there because I just need to spew, right? I just need to let the world know how I feel about things, and this is my outlet.
Yeah. Well, do you think there's anything wrong with spewing?
Yeah, I think by and large, for the most part, we know that it is not good for us. In what we found in the study is that in the immediate, it makes people feel calm and relaxed, right? That was what they said, by and large. I feel relieved to let it out, that sort of thing. However, we also know that that kind of ranting down the road, it leads to more severe anger problems. It leads to offline verbal fights, physical fights, things like that. The people we interviewed, that we surveyed, were angrier than the general population. They expressed that anger more in maladaptive ways. Most of them had anger scores that said that their anger probably interferes with their day-to-day functioning.
Oh, interesting. So just venting, I think of sometimes, I think all of us have vented from time to time. So is it different because it's on the internet and it's anonymous, or should we not vent at all ever?
I'd be resistant to say at all ever, but as a general rule, we know that that kind of venting, sort of the ranting online or in person or any other way, isn't really that good for us. If it becomes our kind of go-to anger expression style, it ends up harming us. We actually refer to this as the catharsis myth, and it's this belief that that hitting a pillow, ranting, yelling, screaming, whatever, that it works to decrease anger, but there's no evidence to support that.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, we saw that you were interviewed in this article in USA Today, which it was pegged off of, but not entirely about, the Kardashians, or Kim Kardashian, apparently, who is, as the writer put it, having a Twitter tantrum because she is the target of jokes and criticism from other celebrities who are, I guess, mocking her yet another nude selfie that she sent. And there are other celebrities that are doing this more and more. So why are people, especially celebrities, taking to social media to vent like this?
You know, I think there's a couple different factors involved. I think one is that people do feel good in the immediate after they do it. You know, so I get upset, I go, I kind of unload all this stuff online, and I feel better in the moment afterwards. And that was what our research showed, is that, almost unanimously, people said they felt better after they ranted. The problem, though, is, well, and to get to back to your question, I guess a couple other things we see is that it's really easy to rant that way, and the consequences kind of come later. And so if you take just a, basic psychology approach to it and think about when the consequences aren't immediate, it's harder for a behavior to be extinguished. We see some of that as well. And then I think, finally, the other thing that happens is that we are reinforced in our online interactions in ways that we never are in our in-person interactions. And so if I rant online, I see how many people favorite it, I see how many people share it or retweet it, how many people like it, and so on. And so I get that kind of positive reinforcement that can encourage me to do it again down the road.
Yeah, I'm thinking personally, and this is not, I did not go to a rant site, but I just, on my own personal Facebook page, I don't know if I was ranting, but I was just kind of bemoaning that a street sweeper kept me up all night with its, going past my house and then beeping and all sorts of noise happening. And just doing that, a lot of people, mentioned, oh yeah, that happened to me too or whatever. Is that, is that considered ranting if I'm just kind of mildly complaining about something?
No, I think that's a really, really important point with all of this, is that kind of in some ways the devil is in the details, because there's different types of writing and there's different types of expressing anger. And there's a difference between going online and telling people you're upset about something, and either maybe you're looking for support, maybe you're looking for, some solutions and you're looking for some help. That's different than someone who's just there because, look, I just want to tell the world how mad I am. And the same thing would be true in an in-person interaction, right? If I go into my coworker's office and I just get mad and say all sorts of aggressive things, and it's not with the purpose of trying to solve anything, that's not really good for me. But trying to, solve whatever problems are making me angry or get support is a different thing.
Well, Brian, on Facebook, on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, when he knew we were going to be doing this topic, and I posted the article and said we were going to talk about anger on the internet, he wrote, "Honestly, who gives a expletive deleted?" And he self-censored himself with the little, the little emblems and symbols. Slow day for public radio. Nothing else happening in the world. And so he was, he was mad. And maybe that was a little mini rant. Anything wrong with that type of expression of your opinion?
Yeah. And I think it's almost impossible to go online and not find these sorts of things. And almost everything I write for, I write for Psychology Today, for example, and I write about anger and I write about this, and then you get the comments at the end. When people comment on Facebook about it and things like that, especially if they're strangers. And that's another thing that the online environment offers to this equation that makes things worse, is I wouldn't call it anonymity because it's not necessarily anonymous, though sometimes it is, but the social distance. These aren't people who are sitting in my office looking at me, and because there's that disconnect, it's easier for people to say nasty stuff or cruel stuff.
Yeah. And again, I think, I'm not sure he was upset with the topic of anger on the internet, which is what I think we are focusing more on. But I think he saw that that Kim Kardashian and Kanye West were involved.
Yep. Well, that is definitely one of those things that you know, when you think about the reasons why people get mad, it always involves some sort of like negative judgment. And I think, you know, that is in keeping with one of the things out there, this notion of, you know, why is this newsworthy? Why are we even talking about this? You know, and that being something that definitely makes people angry.
Well, the article went on to say that Twitter has given rise to a new area of psychology and psychologists who study the phenomenon of social media ranting. So, I mean, in a way, you're among those psychologists who are studying this.
Yeah, and I would argue that it's sort of, in many ways, has changed everything about how we experience and express emotion. Now, the fundamentals are still there, but it's offered us another venue for expression, another language for emotional expression with emoticons and things like that. It changes our kind of pre-stimulus mood. We see that people who, for example, a study came out last summer that found that parents who were looking at their cell phones were more likely to snap at their children, right? And so it changes our mood right before we're provoked, even makes us more likely to snap and so on. We also see more and different opportunities to feel things. We're provoked more often. The more time we spend online means the more times I'm going to come across political opinions that I don't agree with, or come across bad news, or come across good news, or whatever. And so it really fundamentally changes, or it doesn't change the fundamentals, excuse me, but it changes a lot of the details surrounding how and when we feel things.
We are talking about anger on the internet and ranting on social media. It's happening more and more. We're talking about why, and we're talking about what it means, and we're talking about whether it matters. Have you noticed this? And have you experienced it? Have you been on the receiving end? Or maybe do you admit to doing this once in a while, expressing extreme frustration, ranting on a rant site? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dr. Ryan Martin. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. More and more celebrities are using social media platforms such as Twitter and Facebook to vent, to rant. And so are the rest of us. There are even sites dedicated to ranting anonymously about things. According to our guest psychologist, this is not necessarily a good thing. We do it because it feels good at first, but in the long run, it's not very helpful. It might even be harmful. We are talking about the negative effects of cyber rants, and we welcome your questions. We will talk some about how we can express ourselves more productively online. We welcome your examples. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dr. Ryan Martin is an associate professor and chairperson of the psychology department at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay, co-author of the paper Anger on the Internet: The Perceived Value of Rant Sites, and he was interviewed for a recent piece in USA Today that was entitled "Why Do People Sound Off on Twitter?" So why do people rant? We have Rebecca on Facebook who says, "Is it ranting if you are ranting for peace and equality for all? Is protesting against an unfair system ranting? Is it really that bad?"
That's a great question. And I would, again, kind of similar to what I said earlier, I think sometimes the devil is in the details. I don't think, and I'm certainly not encouraging people not to get angry, and I'm certainly not encouraging people not to even take to the internet with that anger. It's a question of what your goals are, what the purpose is, why you're doing it, and what kind of damage you may be doing or harm you may be causing through it. I think that if you're trying to politely and respectfully communicate with someone or convince someone of something, that's very, very different. I mean, you know, you mentioned the UW-Madison social campaign. You know, I've been looking at those tweets, and I'm not, while there's certainly anger there, I'm not seeing the kind of aggression and hostility, or lots, I should say. I mean, I haven't seen every tweet, but lots of the aggression and hostility that would be considered harmful or damaging or problematic. I think that's there's something about kind of voicing and trying to problem solve and trying to achieve change that is healthy.
Yeah, maybe it may. It's can you tell us what might be considered an unproductive rant?
Yeah, I think if the purpose of it is that you want to tell someone off, you want to hurt someone, you want to harm someone, you're not looking for support, you're not looking for advice, it's just purely about telling the world how mad you are. I think that is... I think that is typically unproductive. I think if we're thinking about this as a way of, okay, I'm going to express my anger to achieve a particular goal, and that other than to hurt someone, but, you know, to try and achieve something positive, that's a different sort of phenomenon.
Yeah, so, for example, I mean, if you're just saying a bunch of swear words and I hate this, that, and the other thing, that's not so productive. But if it's... I hate social injustice. We should peacefully protest this at the Library Mall. Isn't something else?
Right, and you know, I think in some instances, trying to alert the people to a problem and trying to say, look, this is an issue for me and for other people, and I want to make it visible. The internet is a great place to make things like that visible, and that's important. And there's certainly anger behind that, but I think that's different from just I just want to tell the world how mad I am.
Right. Well, and when you mentioned the UW social campaign, you are referring to the UW-Madison students who are turning to social media and using the hashtag TheRealUW to tell their stories of discrimination on campus?
Yes. That's exactly it, and I want to preface things by saying it's not as though I've read all of those, but as scanning through, I didn't see a lot of sort of hostility and aggression or sort of useless ranting. What I saw were people who were trying to make a particular problem for them visible.
Yeah, and they are, by the way, just for those who may not know, they are sharing their stories of discrimination after news broke about a third, maybe even a fourth, alleged hate incident this semester involving students of color or minority students. So let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Lisa in Green Bay. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. I was calling in. I was hoping that your guest could speak to... I'm a mental health provider for college students, and I was hoping he could speak to the idea of how rants or venting frustration online impacts people's ability to address conflict directly with each other, human-to-human contact. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Dr. Martin, does it hinder our ability to do that?
Yes, and it does it both directly and indirectly. One, most of the people that we interact with online, or excuse me, most of the people we interact with in person, we also interact with online. And so you may end up damaging a relationship online that bleeds off into the online relation or offline relationship as well, right? And so, you know, I post something really nasty and aggressive. I offend a person that I interact with in person, and it damages that. The other way, though, is that I think we sometimes lose the skill of communicating, or even fail to develop the skill of communicating in person with people when we do too much communicating online, and so. You know, it's very, very, it's easy to imagine a scenario where, or a case where I suppress my anger in person all the time so that I can deal with it online instead.
Let's go next to Cody in Appleton. Hi, Cody.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to make a quick comment regarding what your guest was just talking about a little bit. What do you think the role of debating and kind of exercising these political and cultural arguments in the classroom at a young age has? And also, if you could maybe talk about the loss of public places as far as a venue for these kind of conversations to happen. And I'll take my answer up here. Thank you.
Okay. So I didn't hear, I had a hard time hearing the second part of the question. I think the first part was about debate at a young age and things like that.
He was wondering if, I think he was talking about the young people being exposed to debates at a young age, whether, I don't know, maybe we are getting more angry about that. But he also just said the lack of public places for us to have these one-on-one or, you know, group face-to-face exchanges.
Right. Well, and for the second part, there's no doubt that, you know, we are retreating to our phones and to online environments rather than in-person ones. And, you know, you need only to sort of walk around a college campus and see how many people, and not just students, but people, you know, have their face kind of buried in their phone as they walk to and from class, as they wait for class to start. And I think that, you know, you see that phenomenon in most places, right? People kind of retreating, and then therefore we're having fewer and fewer public discussions and debates and dialogues. So I definitely see that. I do wonder about kind of the lack of civility and what it's like for young people to kind of witness online debates, online arguments, and so on in ways that they never did before. You know, that and I don't have an answer to that question as far as how common is it, how problematic is it, but I can certainly understand where it could be problematic, where it could be.
Specifically, I'm guessing our caller might have been talking about, you can see some really nasty things being said at our presidential debates, and what kind of effect does that have on all of us?
Right. You know, there's and you see, I think those things, they feed sort of both directions, right? And so, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of this is conjecture based experience, but my kids come home from school and say things to me about the election that I certainly wasn't aware of when I was when I was 6 or 7, certainly didn't communicate that way when I was 6 or 7. So I do think that people are just exposed to more incivility and more hostility, and then it's harder to keep those things from kids in particular.
A listener posted yesterday on our Facebook page when we were talking about the violence and scuffles and more that are breaking out at Donald Trump rallies, and Donald Trump saying things like, you know, hey, you know, get him out of here, punch him in the face. In the good old days, you'd be hauled out of here in a stretcher, that kind of thing. And somebody posted a picture of their little girl. I mean, she maybe was 5 or 6 years old, sitting in the car seat in the back seat of her car with kind of a stunned look on her face, and said, "Here's what my little girl is how she's reacting to Donald Trump's comments about punching people in the face." So, I mean, you can hear that kind of stuff just sitting in the back seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is definitely, I think, and you can see video footage from rallies in ways you couldn't before, and all of that. I mean, that's, I think, in so many ways, one of the things that the internet does, and I don't think we have an answer to the question, are things more common than they used to be? But one of the things the internet does is it makes it more visible, and that you see things that you never saw before, and that's true for everyone, not just for kids, but it might be more true for kids.
We are talking about anger on the internet with our guest, Ryan Martin, an associate professor and the chairperson of the psychology department at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, co-author of the paper Anger on the Internet, The Perceived Value of Rant Sites, and he was interviewed for an article on social media and being used more and more as an anger outlet. And we welcome your questions for him or any experiences you might have at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How do you feel about people ranting on social media? Do you see this? Do you see a lot of it? Do you ever rant on Facebook or Twitter? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think spouting off online like this is a bad thing, or do you think it's pretty harmless? Our guest says it might feel good at first if it's ranting, but it's not good in the long run. He says there are more ways to express ourselves productively. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. A caller who couldn't wait, who dropped, wanted to say that he thinks the line between appropriate ranting and inappropriate ranting is when you turn to personal attacks. That is too far. You can, I guess maybe I'll put words in the caller's mouth. You can attack ideas, but don't attack people.
Yeah, I think that's one place to draw the line. And certainly I would agree that's too far. I think that there are other places, too. I think in general sort of a lack of civility, as you know, I realize that's a vague description, but is in general what I think is crossing the line, because I think you can even attack ideas in a way that is profoundly disrespectful, that ends up sort of indirectly insulting the other person. But I would certainly agree that that's a point when it's become too far.
Yeah, only an idiot would believe that. Would not.
Yes. Exactly. That's a common one I've heard lately.
So can cyber ranting lead to? How does cyber ranting differ from cyber bullying?
That is a great question. So I would say in some instances, there's tons of overlap, I would say. And in some instances, cyber ranting is cyber bullying. But cyber bullying, and this is a little bit outside my area, but cyber bullying is also, I think, a broader subset or a broader set of behaviors, right? It includes... It can include, you know, some rumor spreading and a host of things like that.
Yeah. So what do you recommend to people who want to avoid cyber ranting?
You know, I think the first thing that I would tell people is, for all of the ways in which the internet can be a problem for exacerbating online ranting, there's also a lot of ways in which it can be potentially healthy to express online. And so unlike in-person interactions, with online interactions, we actually have more of an opportunity to reflect on how we're feeling, what we're thinking, and so on before we respond. And so I think you have time to ask yourself about, you know, what your goals are. Why should I engage in this discussion? How can I best achieve those goals? What is the purpose of this? And so I think the first thing I tell people, and the most important thing I tell people, is be insightful and be self-reflective. Ask yourself those questions. And if the answer is there's no positive outcome, don't do it. If the answer is this is just going to lead to a fight, it's going to lead to damaged relationships, and so on, then don't do it. If you think that there might be a positive outcome, then start thinking about how you can achieve that outcome. What's, you know, am I trying to convince someone of something? Is that going to work? What's the best way to do it? And so on.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So we have other calls, so let's go to the phones again. Rose in Madison is with us. Hello, Rose.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm calling today. I'm very interested in this topic, and I see that people use the internet as a veil of, they just use it as a veil because there's no accountability at all. They can say something horrible and vicious and hit submit, and that's it. It's gone in the World Wide Web, and nobody has to hold their feet to the fire for something awful they said. And this happened to me in 2011. I think it was 2011 during the Walker riots in Madison when that first erupted. And I was living in Milwaukee at the time, and I was on Facebook, and there were all these pictures of people protesting and angry, gnarly, looking faces, and I really honestly didn't know the details of what was going on because it had just erupted. And I said on Facebook, I just said, wow, there's a lot of anger in Madison today. And almost immediately, somebody from my high school 23 years ago, who I haven't seen or talked to for that long, responded immediately, and somebody I'd always been very friendly with, and said, why don't you condescend yourself down to Madison, and rah, 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 and where would this, where, it was awful. It was so, it was just so vicious. It was like venom coming through the computer screen. And it had such it left such an indelible mark on me that, you know, it was like, I don't need to be on social media. This is ridiculous. People are not held responsible for the things they say. And like your speaker just said, if people were face-to-face, you'd have time to reflect on something before they said it. And quite frankly, I agree. Like, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all unless it's going to be informing or educating somebody of an important issue.
Yeah, and you ended up leaving Facebook because of this, Rose.
Yeah, Facebook is, I think it's more of a curse than a blessing. It's a good way to keep in touch with friends, but it's also a way that people can attack others without being held accountable, because you just hit send and that's it. And then other people comment and they like it, or it just becomes a spiraling effect. I just saw this again. You know, I talked to another friend who commented on something and on a quote, and people just, I think they take things and assume what they believe the other person thinks. But again, because of that lack of human connection, because of that lack of face-to-face interaction, all decorum is lost. It's completely gone. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just really inciting more violence on the internet. And even, you know, if you take it face-to-face, if you would put those two people on the street face-to-face the next day, it will completely change the dynamic between those people. Mm-hmm. I certainly would not. Right. I would not be smiling and shaking hands with Ms. Robin from Madison now because she was so awful to me on the internet. If I said anything, I would say, you know, that was really ridiculous. But, you know, it's fractured relationships because people are not being held accountable for what they, you know, submit.
Right. And it was a very, very, very divisive time, and maybe still is, but made worse by the social media aspect of this and not being face-to-face, Dr. Martin?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I definitely see the caller's point when it comes to a lack of accountability. I do think there are instances, though, where it actually it ends up increasing, or I don't know if increasing accountability is the right word, but I see cases where because it's permanent, essentially, the consequences for whoever did it or said it are much more severe, right? And so, celebrities are a great example of this. How many times have we seen someone say something, decide to delete it, you know, tweet something, decide to delete it, and then have people say, well, I got a screenshot of it, you know, and so it appears and it's there. And I think in those cases, like because of that permanence, it ends up leading to kind of increases in the consequences.
And I was going to say that you are somewhat accountable if you're an old school chum using your name. I mean,
right, right. I do agree with the caller, though, that it does fracture relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the data we've collected definitely points to that and says, yeah, people who people will routinely have kind of problems offline because of some of the problems they've had or some of the interactions they've had online. You know, I think that's pretty common.
We do have to take a break, but before we leave this topic, since Rose gave us such a good example of some anger on the internet, how might, in a hypothetical, a Rose react to someone who's being angry, you know, angry with them?
Yeah, I think the two things that I would encourage, one is consider not responding. Again, go back to what I talked about before, about having some kind of being thoughtful about whether or not you're going to be able to achieve whatever goal you want. And then two, I think model for them a healthy way to talk about it. And so be polite in response and express things that way.
Dr. Ryan Martin is an associate professor and chairperson of the psychology department at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, author of the paper Anger on the Internet, The Perceived Value of Rant Sites, and we are talking about social media as an anger outlet and how it seems more and more people are going on Twitter rants and the like these days. Why is this and what does it mean? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about anger on the internet with Brian Martin, an associate professor and chairperson of the psychology department at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Have you noticed this? Do you do this? Do you want some advice on how to express ourselves more productively online? David in Ironwood is with us next. Hi, David.
Yes, when you have face-to-face conversation, tone means everything. You know, I could say the nicest word in such a tone to really be insulting. But internet, yeah, you sometimes, since you can't use tone, so you revert to even more awful words and stuff. And then I think the level of anger in America is just so high. And some of the people we're angry at are actually walled away in their gated communities, and we really can't reach them. And many people use the internet sort of shelter themselves from anyone. They can live in their gated communities and never have to venture out. And, you know, so I think all this combination there is what's fueling a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I certainly can think of a lot of examples where tone was everything in writing something on the internet. You can just write, Dr. Martin, and somebody might take that as being sarcastic or something.
Right. Yeah, actually, I think those are both really, really good points. Tone it does mean everything. I think I can't imagine there are many people who haven't been involved in a sort of a misunderstanding based on tone, and sarcasm is a great example of that, where they just misinterpret something and it leads to some sort of altercation. I really think that second point is a good one, that this it goes back to what I said before the break about making anger sort of drawing attention to problems in the internet, and that's a way in which we can kind of use the internet and anger on the internet for good, because it is sometimes hard to reach the people that we're angry at, you know, that these aren't people that we necessarily have a direct line to. And so, turning to Twitter, turning to Facebook, and so on, makes things visible for them and draws enough attention to it that they eventually have to respond or have to deal with it.
Let me take another call. Caitlin in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if the guest can comment on a bit of a different take on this topic, and that is from the standpoint of businesses and dealing with potential customer service problems on social media. I've worked for a couple of different companies in social media management and have witnessed firsthand almost the fear-induced reaction from businesses due to the spotlight that consumers have on these social media outlets and some of the spiraling that we can see of poor customer service responses. And when customers have complaints and they take to social media to do these rants and to make these rants, businesses are reacting from, a place of valid, confirmed fear of the spiraling of that issue in front of potentially millions. But I also wonder how much that some of that perceived fear is actually fueling this phenomenon. And, you know, at what point does that end, and what can businesses do about that in this very real phenomenon of this very vocal stage that consumers have as well? And, you know, I see the positives clearly from being a consumer and myself, but I also wonder on the other side from a business perspective, how do businesses deal with that?
Do you have anything to add to that or say about that, Dr. Martin?
Yeah, I think, you know, one venue we haven't talked about too much yet or at all yet is Yelp. And I imagine that's one of the places the caller's referring to, though, of course, I mean, things spiral on Twitter and elsewhere too. And, I've collected a little bit of data on kind of Yelp reviews and things like that, and it's still unpublished. But one of the things we see is that businesses, especially kind of smaller businesses, are really, really nervous about the potential for bad Yelp reviews. They know that a single bad Yelp review can really cause problems. But that's also true. I think. I like the word the caller used, spiraling, when it comes to, how things can escalate on Twitter, because, you know, one person sort of starts the ball rolling and then a bunch of other people sort of chime in. And that, I think, that is something businesses are understandably scared of. And that may or may not be a bad thing. I think part of the question is whether or not the business is really, is in the wrong. And if mistakes were made and they didn't adequately address them, then yes, of course, how do you know? There's multiple sides to every story, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess I'm thinking, too, if a customer feels they were wronged and didn't get satisfaction and did try to bring it up to the company, is there really anything wrong with exposing that wrong online?
Right, and I don't think so. And I think it does. I mean, it puts added pressure on a business owner to respond and respond quickly and to address it as quickly as they can. And assuming that they really did make a mistake, that's a good thing.
Yeah, but I guess I'm learning a lesson, and I'm fessing up to this, that I have, and without necessarily naming names, maybe made a complaint about customer service or how about a car dealership experience that I had without naming the car dealership, when I really didn't go personally to the car dealership. I just kind of was fuming a little bit about something. And I should go to the company before I just plaster it online.
Yeah, I think that, and I have family who own and work in small in restaurants and things like that. And one of the things that he told me once is he misses the days when people kind of just came to him and he worked really hard to try and address it. And he said so often now they don't hear the concern and then it just appears online. Mm-hmm. And that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Thank you, Caitlin, for the call. Let's go to Peter in Middleton. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Joy, my concern is just really the question of free speech. As opposed to quelling these people in any form, they should be exposed more. In other words, we should allow as much crass and vulgar language or whatever needs to be said. And the marketplace of ideas will ferret those people out and we'll know who they are. The question of being held accountable is really a matter of cowardice. The reason I don't go up or somebody doesn't go up and say those same things online is because they're afraid of the polite term of being held accountable or perhaps getting a fist in the face, unfortunately. The reality, though, is that we should never, I truly believe we should never squash any ideas. If a person's a vulgar person, then they're going to express it, and we should know more about it. Just like we should have Donald Trump talking every day. People need to hear more of him, not less of him, because once we know what he's really like, then we'll be able to make the proper decision. And I think that if the idea of the speaker is to make people more polite, well, that's an admirable thing. But we don't live in the Victorian age, and people should be able to express it exactly the way they want to, and then let people make that judgment. I mean, John Stuart Mill is all talking about that.
Thanks, Peter. Hold on a second. What do you think, Dr. Martin? People should be able to express themselves however they want to express themselves.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I'm certainly not advocating squashing free speech or any kind of policing of that. I think what I'm advocating is for people to police themselves and consider how to best get their views across. I think the danger of cases so often the way we talk ends up bleeding into the way we behave. And I think hostility that we or Trump or others may express ends up bleeding into acts of violence. And those are my concerns about that. But I'm certainly not advocating for any form of censorship.
No, but you were saying when we started, too, that the ranting isn't necessarily good for us in the long run either, not necessarily whether it should be censored from a free society standpoint, but just personally, you say that it doesn't do us any good.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean by self-policing. I'm encouraging people to be thoughtful in the way they express things and think about what the impact of what they're saying is on the public, on the community, on themselves, on their relationships, and so on.
Yeah. Peter, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, because if a person is a jerk, I want to know that. Let them. I do not want them to in any way be polite to me. I'd rather them express your real opinion here, and then I can make the judgment that you indeed are a jerk or you are indeed a rude person, and therefore I can make that decision. Your comment really seems to be that, gosh, we should be better people. But if we're not a better person, I don't want that person hiding themselves.
You want to block that person, maybe.
I don't want anyone hiding themselves either. I just want them not to be a jerk. And I think that's doable, right? I think we can change for the better.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Let's go to Yuri in Janesville. Hi, Yuri.
Hi, Joey. Thank you for a great show, and thank you for a topic that's so near and dear to my heart, social media. Just a couple of quick comments. I think, first of all, there's a real big distinction between social media platforms that require you to use your real name versus ones that ask you to come up with some kind of a, you know, just a whatever you want to call yourself. Because when you have no accountability, that's why things like Tumblr turn into these just drama stages where people just are not afraid to be, you know, there's no accountability. You just say whatever you want to say. And as a result, at first people thought this was going to be a great place to, you know, just be with people that are like you, that share your interests and so forth. And now Tumblr is really being kind of looked down on because there's all this drama that's breaking out. You know, and the other specific thing that I wanted to say as far as keeping things a little bit more civil on social media, I run a page in Jaysville called Jaysville Community Page with over 10,500 fans, and I deal with these issues every day. It's a lot of fun. Stay away from pronouns. When we start saying you are wrong, and, you know, and directing it directly at another person, that's when people start taking things personally and real conflict can occur. If we just say, my opinion is, you know, and we express ourselves, then there's a possibility for civil discourse.
Thank you very much, Yuri. Well, what about when you have a reaction, Dr. Martin?
Oh, I think great points, both of them. I do think I wouldn't, you know, especially in thinking about the comments from our previous caller, I wouldn't say that online anonymity is inherently bad, but it is certainly going to lead to greater hostility and greater anger and so on. And that's been shown time and time again, that anonymity just leads to that. And so if you look at sites, I mean, Tumblr's a good example. 4chan is another one that's a good example. Those, there is decreased accountability there that leads to that. Mm-hmm. I also think from a self-policing perspective, the more recent caller here brings up another really good point about how to communicate effectively.
And we have less than a minute. Is there something we can do today, you touched on it earlier, that will make us more productive on social media?
I think I'd just go back to that point I made earlier about trying our best to be insightful, to be self-reflective, and to think about our own goals, why we're doing this, why we're communicating the way we are.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You bet.
Ryan Martin is an associate professor and the chairperson of the psychology department at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison and to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.